Good morning, and welcome to Tiernan's Podcast, episode number 5. This is being recorded on Wednesday, 21st of March, 2012. I'm recording this. I'm trying to make sure the guy in the UPC van can see me. This is being recorded. Stop beeping. This is being recorded on my commute to work, as so far I've recorded all of my episodes. I'm recording it from my car, and I'm recording on an iPhone 4 with Griffin iTalk. I should probably one of these days go into details a bit more about how I record these and everything else, but at the moment I've got another episode planned, and that's what I'm recording at the moment. So in the last episode I talked about packing up Hyper-V VMs, Hyper-V being Microsoft's hypervisor. That comes with most copies of Windows Server at this stage, unless you specifically don't ask for it. If your machine has the virtualization technology, either Intel's virtualization technology or AMD's virtualization tools or virtualization technology built into your processor, you can run Hyper-V. It comes with the Windows Server 2008. It came with 2008, and it also is available in 2008 R2. They have added, it's also in Windows Server 8, and it will also be available as a client option on Windows 8 client desktops, which will be the first time Hyper-V has been added to the client SKU of Windows, which is something I'm actually fairly interested in, since Hyper-V is one of those things that I probably couldn't live without. I kind of need Hyper-V I want Hyper-V for various different things. I've got a lot of VMs running on my main workstation, and I like the idea of being able to run and spin up VMs at will without any issues. And my main workstation has the power behind it. I have enough RAM and enough processors to be able to spin up a load of VMs as I need them. So I like that idea, and it's something that I actually got around the problem of Windows 7 not having Hyper-V installed by just installing Windows 8 Server, or Windows 2008 Server, I should say. So whether I'll actually move back to a client SKU or not is another story, but it's a nice feature to be able to say that Windows 8 client now has Hyper-V, because if I upgrade my workstation, my work laptop, to Windows 8 client, I automatically now have access to Hyper-V as well. I don't have to go looking for a third party VM tool like VMware or what's the other one called? VirtualBox or anything like that. It's already built into Windows, and that's a handy feature. So anyway, Hyper-V comes built into Windows in most cases. You can specifically ask for a non-Hyper-V edition of Windows, or an edition of Windows that does not include
Hyper-V. If for whatever reason you don't want a copy of Hyper-V, but it's free and it's included in the standard edition and up of Windows servers. There's also what's called Windows Hyper-V Server, which is a standalone Windows instance, a standalone hypervisor instance for core machines, I suppose, and that is basically a copy of Windows Server Core. The only option you can actually install on it is Hyper-V. If you were to install a machine with Windows Server Core, you could get it to run as Active Directory server, you could get it to run as a file server, you could get it to run as, there's an awful lot of different features you can get it to run as. And it's there's no GUI as such. When you log into the machine, you're just given a command prompt. On Hyper-V server, you are given two command prompts. One is the standard Windows command prompt cmd.exe. The other one is a PowerShell command prompt, and it allows you to, that's the only way you can actually manage your machine. There is no GUI as such. Your mouse still works and your keyboard still works, obviously, but there's no pop-up windows unless the command you run specifically pops up with a window. There's no start menu, there's no explorer, there's no nothing like that. The idea of both Core and Windows Hyper-V Server is that they are as cut down as possible. They reduce your attack surface, and they allow you to just run the basic requirements or the basic machine as low to the as close to the metal and with as little resources being used as possible. So they're the editions of Windows Hyper-V Server that are available. As I said, you can get it on 2008 R2, all the way from standard up to data center edition, and you can get the standalone version of it as well. So I'm running Hyper-V on a dedicated server that I've got sitting in Germany. And the box is running on 2008 R2 standard edition. I have a quad core hyper threaded Intel i7 processor. It's one of the new generation i7 processors. It has 32 gigs of RAM in the machine, and there are 2 3-terabyte hard drives set up. There's two, I think they're 300 gig disks or 400 gig disks in, or 300 or 400 gig partitions set up as boot drives, and they're rated across both disks. And then the rest is then set up for storage for VMs, backups, and what have you. So this machine is the only task, the only things that are installed on this machine at the moment is remote desktop, so I can get in and manage the machine. Hyper-V, the Hyper-V role, a copy Crash Plan Pro or Crash Plan Plus for backing up the server itself, and a copy of Altero Hyper-V backup, which backs up the VMs. Sorry, headphones is just falling out. Altero Hyper-V backup, which backs up the VMs that I specifically say to back up, they're backed up to a folder, and then, as I said, CrashPlan then takes that folder and backs it up to both CrashPlan servers and my server in-house. So in-house, I'm also running Hyper-V server on two machines. At the moment, I'm running it on two machines. There are a couple of other machines in the house that are capable of running Hyper-V, and one day will end up getting a Hyper-V upgrade. But at the moment, they're currently offline. So the two main machines I've got in the house are the Godbox, which is my main workstation. I may have mentioned this here before. I have a funny feeling I have, but anyway, Godbox is a dual Intel Xeon workstation. It's actually a server board, but it's acting as a workstation. So it's dual Xeon quad core chips. So there's 8 cores, each are hyper threaded. So there's Windows actually sees 16 processors in Task Manager. There's currently 12 gigs of RAM, although I am looking at upgrading that in the next while. It's got two 300 gig 10,000 RPM Velociraptors in RAID 0 for boot. I've added a further two 300 gig 10,000 RPM SAS disks. They're in RAID 0 as well. And sometime in the next while, I'm planning on setting it up so that I'll actually have the four 300 gig disks in RAID 10. So that way I have some security, and I also have speed. So instead of, if I'm reading a file, I'll actually read four disks. Well, depending on the RAID controller, I should be able to read four drives as opposed to just two drives. Writing, I'll still have to write across four drives, and it'll only be the speed of two drives, but it should still make things a good chunk faster. As secondary storage, I have four 1 terabyte hard drives also on the machine. Two of them are in RAID 1. That's where all my really important stuff, photos, documents, that sort of thing, they live there. And then I've got the two other 1 terabyte drives just in JBOD. They're two drives. Windows just sees them as terabyte disks. That's it. I do have two terabyte disks that I'm planning on sticking into the machine in the next couple of weeks as well, or in the next, probably about the same time I'm upgrading the boot array. But we'll see what happens with that. But anyway, that's my main workstation. Secondary workstation, or the secondary box that's in the house, is a Mac Pro. Now, it's actually the first generation Mac Pro. So it's a dual processor, dual core, Xeon chips. That machine has 12 gigs of RAM as well. It's got two 73 gig Raptors. They're the older ones, but they're 10,000 RPM Raptors. There's no RAID array or anything like that. It's the boot drive is a 73 gig Raptor, and then there's a second 73 gig Raptor in there as well. And then there's a terabyte disk for storing VMs and everything else. I have a small NAS in the house, which I think has about 6 terabytes of raw storage in it at the moment. Two terabyte disks in RAID 0, where just stuff that if I lose, it doesn't really matter, goes on there. And then two 1 terabyte disks in RAID 1 for more important stuff. All three of those machines are connected to gigabit Ethernet network, and they have twin gigabit Ethernet network ports on them. So there's no network teaming, since my advanced business switch died. So I've just got a bog standard, I think it's a Linksys gigabit home switch at the moment, but I am planning on getting a proper gigabit switch one of these days that allow me to do network teaming and all that sort of good stuff. But anyway, the way the network in-house is set up is I have a VM on one of the machines that is running Virtual Machine Manager, System Center Virtual Machine Manager 2012. Virtual Machine Manager allows me to manage the VMs, the Hyper-V machines themselves, and the VMs that are on the Hyper-V machines. And that allows me to move Hyper-V instance or Hyper-V VMs around the place and everything else. Now, I haven't played around with that all too much. I've only literally installed it. But the idea would be, if it was working as planned, that my kind of important VMs, like my TMG box and... I don't actually have all that important stuff running in-house anymore. It's all running on the dedicated box. But anyway, the TMG box is in-house. That if the Mac Pro, which is running the TMG VM at the moment, if the Mac Pro needs to go down for a reboot, the TMG instance would actually be living on the SAN or on a NAS. The NAS that I have does iSCSI, so or gives out storage as iSCSI. So it could actually be considered a SAN. But the TMG VHD would live on the iSCSI NAS, and if the Mac Pro needs to reboot, it would tell the Godbox to take over. It would transfer the memory to the Godbox over gigabit network. The Godbox would then start up the instance, and that'd be it. Now, in theory, that's the way it should work. In practice, because the Godbox is running Intel Nehalem architecture processors, and the Mac Pro is on the older first generation Xeon processors. Well, not the first generation. I think they're the same as a Core 2. The Core 2 architecture is in the Mac Pro, and the Nehalem, which is the second generation Core 2, is in the Godbox. So therefore it may not work that way. It may actually have to shut the VM down and then boot it back up on the new hypervisor. But I haven't played around with that that much, so I don't know. Anyway, there was another thing I wanted to mention, which was the way the dedicated server worked. At the moment, the dedicated server is a single gigabit Ethernet connection to the internet, and I've got 4 IP addresses that I've been given by the hosting company. So the main IP address is aimed directly at the Windows Server instance, the main Windows Server instance, and that does that allows me to remote desktop into the machine and remotely manage the machine. There is a second IP address which I've given to a VM which is actually running all the websites. So that's my web server. So when you go to podcast.tiernanotool.com, it's actually hosted, or it's served from the virtual web server. So the web server then goes off and returns the results as needed. So that's a Windows server, Windows Web Edition server, runs IIS, PHP, ASP.NET, all that good stuff. And then the other two IP addresses, one of them is given to a TMG, a TMG box. So I have a VM running TMG. It has a front-facing IP address, and it also has an internal IP address on Hyper-V. So Hyper-V has its own internal network going on. And I think there's 5 VMs in total running on the box in Germany. You got the web server, you got the TMG server. There's a Windows 7 development server. There's an Ubuntu Linux box. And I think of a Windows 8 server for playing around with as well. And the idea is that they're all on the internal network. They don't have a front-facing IP address. They're not connected directly to the internet. They don't have an external IP address. They cannot be connected to directly from the web. But they do connect to the internet through the TMG box itself. So the TMG box can do port forwarding, it can do website publishing, it can do service publishing, and it's actually doing service publishing for, I think it's SSH to the Linux box, but everything else is then, it's hidden behind the TMG firewall. Now to get around that, the TMG firewall also acts as a VPN server, so I can connect through the Godbox at home, my laptop, my work machine, pretty much anywhere, and connect to the TMG box in Germany, and then remote desktop into any of the machines on the network. Any of my network connections look like they're coming from Germany at that, then in that case, and everything just seems to work very well. Now, whether that's the best way to do it or not, I don't know. But the advantage of that would be if I had 3 or 4 different web servers in-house, if I wanted to run a couple of websites on the Linux box, on the IS or on the Windows 8 server, if I wanted to run a couple of websites on a Solaris box, for example, I could spin them up, and then using TMG I can do web server forwarding as such, and say this is if the website is podcast.tiernanotool.com, point it to this server. If it's this IP, if it's this address, point it to this server. And that will allow you to go off and serve multiple sites as required. Now, at the moment, I'm not doing that. All my websites are hosted by my web server, which is publicly facing on the internet, everything else. It's all good. But I do have the option with ISA to do it that way, and use ISA then as a reverse proxy. Not ISA, TMG. The old product was called ISA. They renamed it to TMG Threat Management Gateway. Boom. Anyway, so that's how it's done at the moment. I have looked to see. I asked a question on Server Fault. I'm specifically trying to find out, this is the setup I've got, what are my best options, and the TMG answer did come up as one of the solutions, and it does seem to be the best solution, given that I do have VPN access to it and everything else. And since I'm running TMG in house, I do have the ability to get my TMG network in house to connect to the TMG network in Germany and do a site to site VPN, so that if I connect to, if I'm in house and the VPN is open, all my normal traffic still goes through the internet. But if I go to one of the internal IP addresses on the network in Germany, I'll just get forwarded over the VPN tunnel, and that'll be it. So I can directly connect to machines. And that may also allow me to manage the Hyper-V box over that network as well. Which would actually be an even handier feature. And if I can do that, I can then start looking at the idea of Microsoft's DPM, the Data Protection Manager. Again, it's part of System Center. Data Protection Manager has the ability of backing up virtual machines. You would have a machine in-house or wherever with a lot of storage, and you would basically allow it to connect, or you would give that storage for backups, and TMG or DPM will go off and back up servers to that storage. It works over WAN links. It would work over a VPN link as well. It uses background intelligent transfer, so it's fairly fast, and it does compression and data deduplication and everything else. So if only small amounts of files are being changed over the course of a day, and in the case of, say, the web server, the only things that would be mainly changing will be log files and small bits of the database and everything else, you could get away with maybe only backing up a couple of hundred meg, maybe less, each day. And DPM actually will go off and backs up every 15 minutes or something. I can't remember. The last time I had it, it was backing up every 15, 20 minutes. It was doing incremental backups every 15, 20 minutes. It could have been the way I had it set up. I can't remember. But that way, I could actually get that machine in Germany to join the domain in-house, and I could be able to control the VMs and control the machine using System Center, using all those System Center Data Protection Manager, the Hyper-V Manager, the System Center Virtual Machine Manager, everything else. I could use them to manage the machine. And it's an interesting idea of how to do this. Again, there was a question I asked on Serverfault. I think it was Serverfault. I asked the question on Serverfault, and this did come up as a solution. The idea of using DPM as a backup system, and then maybe because I did mention I had the VPN set up, and one of the options was that if you connected them together, you would then be able to join the domain through the dedicated server. So when the dedicated server loads up, it would be able to join back to the domain once all the VMs start and everything else. So you would just say that the TMG box should start first, your web server should start second. Once you boot the machine, then your TMG box will load up, and the first thing it should do is then connect to the VPN in-house, and that would be it. Now, I don't think any of these tools were designed to be used by a guy like me, somebody who has a home internet connection with 100 megasecond down and 7 megasecond up, and trying to manage three virtual servers, one of which is a couple of thousand miles away in Germany. But it's not stopping me, or at least it shouldn't. So, I'm coming up to the end of this podcast. This episode. Thanks for listening to the show. I'm hoping to start getting a few more episodes out a bit closer to the time they were recorded. As I said, this is now the 21st of March. This probably won't be out until sometime in April. But because of the way I recorded them, I'm releasing them once a week. But I recorded three or four of them. In advance, so this is now the fifth one. So, as I said, website is podcast.tiernanotoole.com. I do have .com, but that, I don't know where that goes. So podcast.tiernanotoole.ie. Leave a comment, ask any questions if you have suggestions for show. Leave feedback for them, and hopefully you're enjoying the show as much as I'm enjoying recording it, because it's been a while since I've recorded podcasts, so I like the idea. I do feel that people are watching me though, because since I'm driving into work and I'm in a car with big windows, people can see me with the iPhone headphones on talking. But then again, what can you do? So as I said, thanks for listening. Comments, feedbacks, all the usual malarkey. You can drop me an email, link should be on the website, and if you have any questions, just ask. Again, thanks for listening. Bye now.